pitch to the Center Circle studio. Tim Van Horn goes studs up into the soccer world where no one is safe. The 18-yard box is wall-free. This is My Three Subs Podcast, a soccer odyssey with your manager, Tim Van Horn.
While some parts of the U.S. are just reopening, one league in Europe is ready to play football in just a couple of weeks. We'll tell you which one.
Yay, football!
A supercomputer straight out of science fiction? Nah, it's for reals. There's a supercomputer in football that's changing its goal from fighting crime to fighting the coronavirus. Nice. We'll tell you where and how so.
Not mad.
And Brody's been watching a lot of TV lately.
Yeah, well, move over, MJ. There is another sports documentary to watch on Netflix. We're reviewing it. It's called Sunderland Till I Die. We have to give you the skinny on it. It's so good.
All of that, plus we have a transfer window where one family added a member to the team. Whoa. We've got that. Brody and I are standing in the hallway with our shin guards on, socially distant, with nowhere to go because there ain't no games right now. This is My Three Subs.
We'll be back with today's kickoff from the Center Circle Studios. This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
Hey, everyone, this is Tim. While soccer is my passion, real estate is my business. I'm licensed in the state of Mississippi and Tennessee with Cry Like Realtors. My phone number is 901-756-8900 at the office, or you can call my cell at 901-262-5000. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, I can help you with either, and I'm happy to do so even in these difficult times. We're deemed essential, and we can help you make your move. I have a couple of properties available right now, a condo in Midtown at 1960 North Parkway. With the monthly fees that are included in that, you get everything except cable. But hey, everybody's streaming off the internet now, so do you really need the cable anyway? And I've also got a beautiful 5,100 square foot home at 1850 Overton Park. It's just a short stroll from the Memphis Zoo, and you guessed it, Overton Park. Give me a call at 901-756-8900 at the Cry Like Realtors office, or on my cell at 901-262-5000. And you can check out these properties and find pretty much anything you're looking for at timvanhorn.com. timvanhorn.com. If you're looking to list your house, I can help you get the best price for it and help you make your move. That's at timvanhorn.com.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. We're underway from the Center Circle Studios.
You know, we've had so much to do with this shutdown of sports, but I found a way to wedge in a few minutes here and there to watch the Netflix series, Sunderland Till I Die.
Yes.
And finally got through. And you've gotten through it as well. Do what?
It filled the void of sports a little bit because they actually showed some matches and stuff, and I was like, gosh, I miss sports.
I miss it. Because it darn near made me cry a couple of times in the series.
Yeah. Sunderland Till I Die. Really, really compelling story.
Now, Sunderland has a very long history. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I know that people are going to say it's Tiger King on grass and with goals, but it's not. It's the furthest thing from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Sunderland has a long history. They've been in the Premier League a couple of times, and they've had their share of success, you know, back in the day. Now, recently, they struggled, and the premise of this whole series of Sunderland Till I Die was Sunderland had just gotten relegated out of the Premier League and was dropped to the Championship, and it was supposed to be a documentary about them building their way to a triumphant return to the Premier League.
Yeah, you could totally tell. Like, season one was supposed to end with them getting back in to the Premier League and how glorious it is, Cinderella story. And they're going to come and you know, the Mighty Ducks are going to quack all the way to the end. And, you know, and we are the... It's going to be a big Queen moment. Nope. Spoiler alert. No.
I think all along this was supposed to be a two-series documentary, with season one being the struggle and the triumphant return to the Premier League. And then season two, I think, was their hope that if they invested in the production company did this, that they would be rewarded by doing a documentary on what would then be a Premier League team.
Right. Right. That was supposed to be it. However...
And in all fairness, Sunderland has won 6 first division titles in its history.
Yeah.
Of course, now it's called the Premier League.
Right.
But you have to go back. You go 1892, 1893, 1895.
Jeez.
And then you have 1902, 1913, and 1936. They've won a couple of FA Cups. They've been a couple of runner-ups in that. They've won the Charity Shield. They've been in the League Cup. The last time they were in the League Cup, which is now known as what, the Carabao Cup?
Carabao Cup.
Back in 2014. So they've had some success. It's been sporadic, but they've been there. But I guess we can go ahead and do a spoiler about the first season, I suppose.
Sure.
Things were an absolute mess. As we get into the show and to give you a bit of the background, there was plenty of football to watch, but there was so much that they gave us access to in the training room, mm-hmm. on the training ground. And what really fascinated me was the front office, Brody.
Yeah, I was surprised at the amount of access and just the almost free range that we literally got a full behind the scenes in the front office and all the inner workings thereof. And I knew a lot happened, you know, in the front office, but I didn't know that much happened. It's really compelling.
Yeah, and we find out that they're about as good as balancing their checkbook and their credit accounts like most Americans are.
Yeah, they're terrible. And they're just like, don't even know where the money's going. They, you know, just send off the bills to somebody in Florida or wherever who owns the team, you know, like it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it was painful to watch because you knew at some point.
Oh, yeah.
When the can was getting kicked down the road, at some point, it was going to come back and bite them, because if you spend that much money but you don't get the return every single time,
yeah,
you're basically walking on thin ice. And finally that ice broke.
Oh, and
it had gotten so bad for them that they had brought in Sam Allardyce to try to save the club. You know, Sam has managed Bolton. I think he's managed Blackburn. He has managed West Ham. He has managed the England national team, but then he got canned for that after like a handful of games for some scandal.
Right.
But David Moyes was brought in as a replacement. Chris Coleman was brought in as a replacement.
I felt bad for Chris Coleman because he really did try. Like he was adamant, like, this is what we need to do to win, you know. And for the most part, the fans were behind Chris Coleman. Except it just didn't work, man. It's that black cloud that over Sunderland, maybe. I don't know, but can't fault the guy for not trying, you know?
Well, it's incredible because what we thought would be a relegation to the Championship and then back to the Premier League turned out to be a relegation to the Championship and then a relegation to League One to third division freaking football. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And let me throw this in the mix as well, Brody, because you may not remember this, but one of England's top goalkeepers, Jordan Pickford,
yeah,
came from Sunderland and he was sold to Everton, I think between $25 and $30 million, which is a record.
Yeah.
For a British goalkeeper. In fact, he was the guy that took over for Tim Howard.
Oh, wow. And he was from Sunderland. You know, the thing is we're kind of dogging on Sunderland a little bit. Just the black cloud. I mentioned the black cloud. You know, their mascot is two black cats. OK, so I that's why I chuckled throughout the entire program about the people being superstitious. I was like, yeah, but your mascot's a black cat. Like, that's bad, right? Like,
and everybody walks under a ladder going into the match. And all the turnstiles, there's a ladder you got to walk under.
I'm like, y'all are doing it wrong. Do you like break mirrors as you walk to the match as well? But anyway,
let me mention this too, because you got Pickford, but he may not even have been one of the best players amongst the group. I mean, he's good and everything, but Jordan Henderson.
yeah,
played at Sunderland, and he got sold to Liverpool.
Yeah, like
By the way, he turned out to be the captain for the Champions League champions.
Yeah, so I mean, there's that. There were a lot of good players though that were even in the documentary. Those two young kids who came up through the academy.
Onayan was very good.
Yeah, like really, really strong player. You know, and a good mid level player. You know, could definitely hold his own in any pitch that he's on. So there was a lot of really good talent on Sunderland's team. For them not to do well, I don't know who to blame. Is it the manager? It wasn't the players necessarily. I kind of fault the managers. I don't know. I guess I do. I don't know.
You know, there was a turnstile of managers through there, and I feel pretty sympathetic in the second season. Mm-hmm. To the owner of the club.
Yes.
I thought Stuart Donald, the chairman.
Yeah.
I thought to me had done a good job. And then was it Charlie Methven? Is that the guy's name that worked under him that was kind of on game ops and would go out and wanted to change the entrance music to dance, you know, kind of a techno. Or, you know,
got
dance music.
Ridiculed for it.
Yeah. But I'm sympathetic because he loved the club.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted the club to grow and try to become fiscally responsible in that level. I thought Jack Ross was a decent manager. He came from St. Mirren from Scotland.
Yeah.
Thought he was a decent manager. I mean, we can go on and on about the missteps and the unfortunate things because they lost twice at Wembley in this series.
Oh, gosh.
A cup match and a promotion match. So that was pretty bad. But let's talk about a couple of positives. One, we just mentioned the ownership. Sympathetic to Stuart Donald.
I will say this: the ownership in the second season. The first season, I think the problem was the ownership. Okay, and then the second season, the problem was the manager. But you know, that's neither here nor there. But they had a good manager in the second season.
Well, and they also sold Magyar in the second season. They had a forward that was on a record pace to score goals in League One. They were drawing attendance figures in the 20s and the 30,000s,
right,
if I'm not mistaken.
No, they sold out a couple of matches. Well,
so they were doing fine, and that leads me to one of my favorite parts, one of my absolute favorite parts of this series, and we're not going to go into the minutia of all of it, but I think the Sunderland fans remind me so much of Memphis sports fans, because Sunderland over the last couple of seasons in this documentary have been close to catching a break or catching some sort of sporting glory, only to see it evaporate in the very dying moments in some bizarre way.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's how Memphis things happen. When they fall apart here, they fall apart in weird ways. And it's also Sunderland is very much a working class Northeastern.
Oh, it's blue collar. Yeah.
Grit and grind town.
Yeah.
Earn everything. You don't ask for any quarter. You don't give any quarter. And if you have players that play hard for you, then that fan base will follow them to the moon and back regardless of results. If they think you're slagging off, then
goodbye,
out the door
good
you
luck.
Go. Right. And I think the same thing as Sunderland. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, as I was watching it, I was like, I might be a Sunderland fan. You know, like, I think I have to be, because like the town, the people and everything like that, it's like Memphis. It's on the river. You know, they had like this great, economy when the boats were coming through and stuff like that. And I was like, holy crap. if there was only blue, it would be Memphis.
All right, it's pretty incredible, the similarities.
Yeah,
in the way they were. I think their winters are a little bit colder than ours.
I mean, they get snow and stuff like that. But still, it was like, cool. I think they're located in North England and not South England, though, right?
Yeah, in the Northeast.
Yeah, Northeast.
Yeah, because their biggest close rival, if they were in the same division, would be Newcastle.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we, I guess, oppose each other in that regard, but you know, still pretty cool.
Other than that, I think it's binge worthy.
Yeah,
the tragedy makes it binge worthy, but you know, the only other element to me really is just the vibe of the fans. Yeah, you get those that are upset and the swearing and the bleepity bleep.
Yeah,
but you have some long suffering fans that find their favorite players. They bond to those players. Uh-huh. The players typically bond to the community.
Yep.
And it's just a beautiful buy-in on both parts. And it was really, for me, an education on how the football culture in England is so entrenched in mm-hmm. society in general. I mean, it's really interwoven, and it's not something that's manufactured.
No, and that's the thing. Like, that Sunderland club is that Sunderland city, and what happens in both happens in the town too. And yeah, and what was interesting though is it, going back to the rise and fall of players, but also the managers, you know, where take Chris
Coleman,
right, comes in and everybody's like, wow, this is great, yes, and we love this guy. Then fast forward to the end and literally cussing him out on the way to the bus, you know. It was pretty interesting, like, just to watch that roller coaster ride of the fans and the players alike.
And I admire that they take charter buses to the away matches, and I think, gosh, boy, they sure do go a long way. And I think, wait, England's an island. Yeah. And really, their longest road trip is almost like us going to Nashville.
Yeah, I think it's like 4 hours was the longest. Yeah. You know, but still, like, the team, like, chef and everything like that came along with them, and they're cooking in the charter bus and stuff like that. I was like, that's kind of cool.
And she's in tears when they lose.
Oh, I know, I felt so bad for her.
And if you watch season one compared to season two, the cuts that the club have to make in the nutrition department, the training and other facilities, you start to see staff furloughed or just altogether let go, because you can't, the TV money's gone. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, other than the parachute payment from the Premier League, other than that, the steady TV revenue, I mean, it's gone. You've got to fight your way back, or you're going to be
SOL.
In deep trouble without deep cuts. I mean, it's pretty incredible, but I give it a 10 out of 10. I think it's binge worthy. It has tragedy in it. It has hope. It has love in it. It has community, and
I hope there's a season three
opener.
I really hope there's a season three. Like, I know where Sunderland is positioned now.
You got to tell us, because this is so Memphis or so Sunderland.
Yeah. So if you're thinking like, okay, they've hit rock bottom, it's only up from here, which is a quote in the second season. We can only go up from here. Well. They're going to stay there, because right now they are 1 point away from being in the playoffs to get back into the Champions League. So looks like they're in where they are for at least another season.
You know, there's our first difference between Sunderland and Memphis, because if the season, or if the end of the season were right now, Memphis Grizzlies would be in the playoffs by basically one or two games.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and Grizzlies have been in that position where they were 1 point away and then they just squeak in. And I think the longest run that the Grizzlies were on to switch modes to the basketball, we made it to the did we make it to the not to the
finals?
We made it to conference finals. Yeah, and we came in as an 8 seed. So, you know, I'm not saying like Sunderland in that regard just needs that little oomph. They need that 1 point. They have to get that 1 point, and it's only going to take maybe one more game.
Honestly, if we're going to be really 100% real, they're going to have to get several more points, because if the season were to go without playoffs, or excuse me, I guess I should say without promotion and relegation playoffs, they would have to get second place or first place.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have to.
First place is out of the question.
Yeah. First place, I think, is too lofty. Second place, honestly, might be too lofty too, though, for them. And if that's the case.
Yeah,
I feel bad.
Well, it's been an enjoyable watch, and hopefully there's a third season.
I hope so. Gosh. So honestly, sometimes it is like Tiger King. It is like a train wreck. You have to watch. And then other times you're like, oh, gosh, the drama is just so heavy. It's so good.
You know what it is? Carol Baskin killed the Black Cats.
That bitch.
More next on My Three Subs, A Soccer Odyssey.
This podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters.
But we want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services and actually made the switch to Podcave.
Yeah, combining all the tools that we need to make the best shows we can, to make them available on all the platforms you use, and to always stay connected with you. Now, Podcave provides unlimited audio storage for all of our episodes, new and old. They're always available whenever you want them.
Our website, by the way, it's included, built in to Podcave. So you can, you know, find us on one place.
It's really that easy. And by the way, I know there's a hang up. Music and soundscapes that we use on the show, well, they're professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave, so you don't have to worry about finding them, nor do you have to worry about getting sued for using music without their permission.
That's such a big deal. We get an email, by the way, and text engagement tools to stay in touch with you. Guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines, which is a huge time saver.
We used to have to piecemeal all this stuff. It cost hundreds of dollars every month, and we had to have all these different accounts with different passwords and different windows. It was a mess.
To say the least, it was a mess. Podcave put all that together one spot, and it only costs $49 a month. Hosting and distribution, a killer website, episode planning, everything we need, $49 a month, Tim.
Save time and money with Podcave. Try it free for 1 month. Go to podcave.com/my3subs and get a month on us. That's podcave.com/my3subs.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
So I know that nobody's really kicked a ball in quite some time. I can't even freaking speak. Okay, 3, 2, 1. I know there haven't been any official games in over a month, and it seems like the news has been, well, not much there, but we've actually got a little bit this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it a month, not like anybody's counting, but sure. And then every bit of news that we've seen is all either speculative or it's kind of just, it'd be nice if kind of news. So, but there's news now.
Yeah, absolutely. In the Premier League, as a matter of fact, and for Newcastle fans, I don't think it could have come at a better time. They have long, long wanted owner Mike Ashley out at Newcastle United. You know, he has those sporting goods chains over there called Sports Direct.
Yeah.
He has not been very popular, and that's putting it nicely in regards to the fans. It looks like he may have sold the club. I think they're going through some last bit of official vetting, and it looks like he is going to be gone as the owner of Newcastle United.
So what does that mean for the club as a whole? I mean, like, better management, of course. I mean, as we talked about in the review, when Sunderland got sold, it seemed that the new owners kind of took like a new, we'll just say, more hands-on approach, right? Do we know who is the potential buyer or the buyer for Newcastle? Oh, we do.
Yes, let's take your questions in order. First of all, what will it be like post-sale? Imagine a New Orleans funeral, dancing in the streets, partying.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the main sentiment.
Okay.
An official announcement of the sale should be coming up within the next week.
Okay.
But it sounds like a deposit has already been paid for purchasing the club. And okay. I think next there's some sort of a league owner's test. I don't know if it's a financial stress test or what it is, but there's some sort of a test that they have to pass.
They hold up a ball. Do you know what this is? Yes.
It might be Alan Shearer or Michael Owen trivia questions. I don't know what it's going to be. But after that, a big chunk of the £300 million that they're using to buy the club will be transferred. And Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who's a friend of Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, will become the new chairman of Newcastle United.
Wow.
And they're already throwing out some names of some managers that they would like to have.
Allegri
from Italy, Pochettino, Rafael Benitez back. You know, he was loved at Newcastle.
Yeah.
And Lucien Favre as well are amongst the top names.
You know,
I mentioned the chairman. The actual consortium is called PCP Capital Partners. So if you look that up, you can Google that online and find out, you know, the boatloads of money they have.
Make sure that you actually include the last, you know, word there, and just don't search PCP, because, you know, you might end up on a list.
That's a good point. But they've got more zeros than I had on many calculus quizzes in high school.
That's good stuff. You know, Newcastle might be better off, though, going with a Newcastler, you know, just to kind of ramp up the, we'll just say, the hype train again. You know, you see that oftentimes where, you know, you get a new manager in and they don't really know the town. But I mean, they're familiar. They're not, you know, it's different when you get pure blood, if you know what I mean, in there to kind of shake things up.
That's going to be tricky, though, because the Newcastle fans are a bit fickle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who do you get to do that that's from Newcastle? Because if you come in and the club is not quite ready to continue to grow, then you tarnish your legacy.
That's true, too.
I mean, that's a big dice roll.
Double-edged sword.
A Newcastle player. But I am impressed that they're wanting to go after, you know, a top flight manager, but they've also said out of the other side of their mouth that they will give Steve Bruce time to prove that he's worthy of the job that he's currently in there.
You know, you can give somebody time and then you give somebody time. Like, all right, well, it's been 30 minutes. Did you figure it out yet? No? Okay, good. You're gone.
You're out of there. But yeah, Newcastle is going to be under new ownership. And I think the Newcastle fans, for them, it's almost like Christmas comes in April or May, whenever the ink dries on the on the paperwork. Hey, did you hear about that supercomputer that La Liga has? It's incredible.
You know, La Liga's been trying to stir up some news here for, I guess, about 3 weeks now. What is this supercomputer news?
The La Liga supercomputer is, it's not much bigger than your typical computer, but they say it's about 4,500 times faster processing-wise than the average computer. Okay. And they use it. It has one purpose typically, and that is to sit in its league office and essentially track down piracy and flag it and find it. Its job, it's more of a super crime fighter. Well, now, and maybe you've heard about this because you're a little more tech savvy than I am. But there's this organization or this company. I don't know quite what you call it, but really this company was reached out to by the league, and the league, of course, has the supercomputer in Madrid.
Sure.
And there's this company that it's called Folding at Home. It's a platform in which people volunteer to run computer simulations that focus on medical research. And La Liga has taken on that app or whatever it is to allow their resources for scientists to basically borrow their processing speed to run simulations on the coronavirus.
Wow. Good for them. Way to go, Liga.
This is going
to
be a funny story, right?
No, I thought it was going to be like, hey, and then they blew up half of Mexico or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like it decided to, like, actually create the Terminator or something. This is great news.
Yeah. Technically, the computer is, they say, like 4,200 some odd times faster than the average computer when it comes to processing speed, which and capacity, which means essentially, since there's no games and they're not having to look for
anything,
piracy and fraud, essentially they have turned it over to their computer to science.
Wow. That's what
they've done. And I actually know people here in the Memphis area that have done the same thing. I mean, they may have like a spare laptop and just let it run.
Yeah.
And essentially that capacity can be used to run sims on coronavirus because it's ever changing. So
sure,
there's not necessarily a one size fits all answer that we know of yet.
Right. Yeah. And that's really cool. I know of a couple people who have turned over their entire, you know, kind of office building and into that because they're not using it, you know, with the stay-at-home orders and whatnot. Now, obviously, those are going to kind of be lifted here. News is they're going to be lifted here in just a little bit. But, you know, they still kind of turned over the CPU usage for a while to medical research. That's pretty cool. No, but the news that I heard was actually pretty cool, too, coming out of Liga MX. And it's not going to happen anytime soon, but the bug and the buzz has started. And that is the rumor that Liga MX wants to merge with MLS. Or basically partner with MLS.
To form one super league for a regular season or a super tournament? What are they wanting to aspire to?
They want to aspire to basically like a CONCACAF league, which is essentially would be what it is because it would be U.S. and Mexico with the option of other teams coming in to play. It would be like a super league that would play each other in a season. It'd be pretty cool.
I think it would be beneficial for both. A couple of reasons. Just listening to what you're explaining. One, for MLS, I think it would be great because Liga MX is next to the Premier League and maybe close to the Premier League, the most watched league in the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then could you imagine like the trading that gets involved with that now? Like it's a lot easier to trade team to team than league to league. You know what I mean? And then everything bolsters at that point, you know, from Liga MX developmental. I know the U.S., the MLS has kind of diminished or if not, you know, kind of completely done away with their developmental league. But it would kind of force that to start back up in a way.
You know, on the flip side for Mexico, it would be beneficial because the MLS is starting to poach their players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed that. I mean, more than Chicharito, but there's been other players. Polito has come, you know, to Kansas City as well, and I don't see that trend stopping anytime soon. So it could be mutually beneficial. My guess is this is an attempt to maybe try to do something by the time or near the time of the 2026 World Cup, in which Canada, Mexico, and the United States host as a triumvirate.
Right. You know, and that could be true, too. But and that, you know, I don't think it's off the table that, you know, like a CONCACAF where maybe a Canadian league of some sort kind of starts up, because this isn't happening tomorrow. This isn't happening this season. This isn't happening next season. I think date that I saw was like 2026 or something along those lines, where they hope to have it all kind of wrapped up and tied up in a bow. But, you know, it could be rather interesting to see what kind of develops in the meantime. You know, if you do have a Canadian league that is like, you know what, we want in and then form a true CONCACAF kind of league, that'd be cool.
Now, I know Canada is working on growing a Canadian Premier League, so that may be a few years down the line, as you said, might be a northern piece of the puzzle. Mexico's a southern piece of the puzzle, and we're the central piece of the puzzle. So, hey, we got to keep an eye on that, because I think if there's money to be had, I think they could go to CONCACAF and FIFA and say, hey, we got this idea. Well, I don't know about that. Money. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do this. How quickly can we do this?
You know, and the thing, you could have the built-in TV with ESPN as you were going with, but to kind of branch off there, you would automatically have a kind of a core audience that buys video games that would buy into this thing. So there you go. You have two titles with FIFA, a Premier League title, and then I'm just going to say a CONCACAF league, just because I don't know. What would you call it? Liga MX? I don't know.
You got me there. But also, you got to remember there's television on Fox Sports 1 as well, because they handle the Mexican league on the weekends, too. So you already have a couple of vendors that could be bidding against one another for additional matches, which would be, again, another way to influx cash into Cha-ching. Both of the leagues. By the way, ESPN FC has an interesting story here, and it talks about all of these leagues, which, by the way, Germany is looking at an early May return to the Bundesliga. At least that's their latest statement. I don't know if that's going to be coming to fruition or not, but ESPN FC, if you go there, they have an interesting story on how many people actually have to be in an arena to play behind closed doors. You know, we've seen these before where teams have been sanctioned for racial abuse or for FIFA fair play violations.
Sure.
And Mark Ogden, who's a senior writer over at ESPN FC, has done a story about a match. If it were to happen in the Premier League, how many folks it would take to host a game, what you would need. And he believes, looking at the numbers, that you would need about 200 people in the facility to be able to have a match. He says, for example, you would need 6 safety officers, even for a closed doors game. At a bigger Premier League stadium, you would need to multiply that times 5. So there's 30 just to cover basic requirements.
Goodness, 200 people.
In fact, if you have a bigger Premier League match with the media rights holders who have every right to be in the building, you could look at a total of about 300 people total, because not only do you have, you know, broadcasters are typically either there or they're in some remote studio calling the game,
sure,
but you still got to have the people that run the cable, run the cameras, run the audio. You got to have all of those people. Those things just don't take care of themselves. You got to have riggers, electricians, technicians, producers.
Jeez.
I mean,
at that point, you know, just open it up.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I mean, you might as well just let the other 50,000. No, I'm kidding. That's hyperbole. But it does make you appreciate the effort that goes into bringing every Premier League match.
Yeah.
They just don't happen by themselves. They don't just punch a button to get all those great camera angles and all that great sound that you've got to have. Then you've got 2 squads of 18 players.
They don't punch a button just yet. Watch out. It's coming. Somebody's like, oh, wait, I'll fix that. No problem.
Then let's throw in assistant coaches, team doctors, trainers.
Yeah.
Who else have you got? I guess probably emergency services.
Yeah,
you gotta have paramedics.
Paramedics.
Ball boys, ball girls.
Yep. Yep. I didn't even think about them. Yeah. Yeah. They have to be there. Then you gotta have, need a PA?
You'd need a PA, but you'd also need a grounds crew, because at halftime they go out there with their pitchforks and take care of the divots and maybe roll out some areas and put the little sand in the spots. What are you laughing about?
They get out there with the pitchforks. What is it, like an angry 1890s mob?
You know, I guess it depends on which city and what the score is, but yeah, maybe. No, they did you not see the movie Pretty Woman? They get out there and, you know, in between the, you know, whatever those periods are called, they get out there and, you know, mash the grass down and use pitchforks and bottles of sand. Nothing like bringing up a good hooker movie, right?
Right. Oh my gosh, where have we gone? How did we get here?
But looking at between 200 and 300 people, and oh, by the way, although you wouldn't need them necessarily in the building, you would need a liaison for VAR there as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, even though they wouldn't be in the building, they would still be together at another facility, adding to that total number of people. So, you know, just because it's not necessarily you're all confined to that one area, you're still confined in separate areas, maybe fewer people together. You know what I mean? So, like, if you have a VAR area and, God forbid, you were to, say, run 2 of these matches together, well, then that's all those AV people too, audio video people in that room with those VAR machines running simultaneously. So, yeah, there's a ton of people involved. So 200 to 300 people, that's very realistic, if not low.
Well, let me throw this at you while I'm on a roll here. And I've heard different versions, different suggestions on this. If soccer comes back and they do complete the season, they're going to play a ton of games in a, you know, 3 to 6 week period.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. There's now a call out for a temporary, maybe even to eventually move to a permanent basis, to increase the number of substitutions from 3 to 5.
I'm totally down for that. I'm totally down for that.
Well, wait, there's more. This is a hybrid suggestion that you might like even more, because if I'm on the same wavelength as you, you're probably thinking right now, God, that's going to make the games even longer, although it's a really good idea for safety's sake.
Right.
One of the caveats would be you would still only be able to use 3 stoppages of play to make 5 substitutions. So on a couple of those, you could sub multiple players.
I'm okay with
that. You could use 5 players, yeah, but you can only make
stop
3
play
stoppages for substitution. That way, essentially, you don't change the amount of time the match drags on.
I'm fine with that. Like, I am A-okay with that. Like, yeah, if you stop the play 3 times, you know, and the thing is it's not a knee-jerk decision of who you're going to sub out most of the time. Most of the time, it's like pretty calculated on who you're going to sub out, when you're going to sub them out, you know, that whole thing. Like, it hits 75th minute. Most of the time, somebody's getting subbed. Just name of the game. 80th minute, absolutely. Somebody's getting subbed, you know. So
if you're winning, you got a sub to burn, you're going to be subbed.
Yeah, you're going to sub just because fresh legs are fresh legs. You can't beat that. And now you can sub 2? Absolutely. I'm doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
it'd be interesting to see when they come back, if they implement that for safety's sake, if you could reduce the workload of some players on a rotating basis, that's got to be good for the player. Sure. And that's got to be good for the game. I would think that the Players Association would totally be on board with that.
Could you imagine how much more competitive these matches get later? Like, you think the 80th, 90th extra time, you know, it gets exciting then? Well, then put in, like, 2 people with fresh legs. 3 people with fresh legs. 5 with fresh legs? Are you kidding me? That's great. Oh, man.
And then you may eventually see that guy that never gets in, that's like the 18th on the bench,
yeah,
might actually, you know, get a few minutes or get that first match in for the club.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at tanking or something along those lines, or maybe just the game's a wash and you're looking at getting Joe Schmo out there, then yeah, absolutely. Be fun.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, that went by the brass door this past Friday, and Seamus opened up on his birthday for 4 hours. He served fish and chips for $10, to-go pints for $3.
So great.
And he had a great response. He actually fed Memphis 901 FC. They came down. You know, it was interesting to watch the line of players as I was leaving. They were all like 6 to 10 feet apart in a single file line. It was like they were in elementary school coming in to get the fish and chips, but they were abiding by all that.
Good.
And I talked with Seamus for a few moments, spoke with him about reopening. And in the state of Tennessee, what they call the safer at home order, or voluntary lockdown, whatever you want to call it, is set to expire on April 30th. The governor here in Tennessee, Bill Lee, says he's going to let that expire, and that 89 of the 95 counties can basically, you know, as long as you observe some reasonable social distancing, businesses can start ramping back up. Well, the Nashville metro area, where Nashville SC is, Davidson County, and there's a handful of other counties, including Shelby County, where we're located, are not amongst those 89. We're still pretty much left up to our local municipal mayors to determine when we come back. So with that, we're going to keep an eye out, because Seamus told me that he may get to fully reopen at the end of May, which for him, if it's a Saturday or a Sunday, Monday, would really end up being like a June 2nd.
Right.
But in the interim, he's kind of he's throwing a pickle against the window and seeing if the idea of opening each Friday for a few hours works.
Oh, I'm
and
totally
let
down.
Us know so that we can share on social media with everybody.
Yeah, no, I hope he does, man. Oh, I could swing by and pick up a shepherd's pie maybe one week. Oh, and then I really hope this stays where the $3 pint, the drive-through pints, not saying the drinking and driving is cool at all, but, you know, it clicks off one of those things off the checklist of the grocery store trip. You know what I mean? Like, oh no, it's okay. I got my beer. I'm good.
Pretty much. And we hope that that's going to be, you know, we hope that Sheamus is going to open up at least for a few times before, you know, opening up for real. He's got a new bar manager, by the way, and they have a new recipe for the fish and chips. Might have been the best damn fish and chips I've ever
eaten. Dude, if I could eat fish, I'm allergic to fish. So don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't like it. I would die if I ate it. But no, it did look really, really good. The fish and chips, those fries looked fantastic.
By the way, you know I've got your back. I asked the new bar manager if the shepherd's pie recipe was changed, and he says, oh, no.
Okay.
Nope. Good. That's Sheamus's baby.
I would have to fight, you know. I would literally go in there, close door, and knock some heads if they were, you know, planning on changing some of that stuff.
No, they are sticking with that. They know a good thing when they've got it. So brass door, hopefully, back open the 2nd of June. Like I said, I think June 1st. Is a Monday, and they're always closed Monday, and he's not going to break tradition because of that, because that's just how he is. He says they're doing fine.
Good.
Everything's going to be okay, and when they get back, they're going to be same old brass door.
Oh,
and just excited. Excited that he'll be back soon.
Well, follow us on social media. We are at My Three Subs podcast. We're also My Three Subs Soccer Pod on Instagram for any of those updates. So shout out to Sheamus. We'll keep you updated with all that. So Twitter, Facebook, at My Three Subs Podcast, Instagram, My Three Subs Soccer Pod. You can also shoot us an email if you want to get in touch with us. We are at My Three Subs Podcast at gmail.com. And let's see.
One more thing before we go.
Yeah.
If have we got 30 seconds?
Yeah, we got
it. Or 3 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. And besides, we need to plug our stuff more than once anyway. So okay. It's all good. Hey, I had an email conversation with Ryan Madden, the vice president of communications and PR for the USL. As you know, last week, U.S. Soccer dissolved its development academy.
Yes.
And within 15 minutes, holy mackerel, it's a miracle. The MLS has its own youth elite academy leagues that they're, you know, developing.
Huh. Interesting.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Well, I emailed Ryan, and knowing that USL Championship is where we focus a lot of our energy on, but we've also talked to Ryan about League One and League Two, which is really the first steps into a professional-like situation for a lot of these young players.
Sure.
And knowing additionally that they were going for another level even beneath that, I asked him, you know, what his thoughts were and the league's thoughts were on those developments with the MLS and with the dissolution of the Development Academy. And he actually had plenty to say about it. Actually, when he wrote back to me, he just simply said,
"Those expletive deleted."
He says, "Hello, Tim. How are you? I am fine." No, he didn't write that. Quote, "Over a year ago, we announced a new academy platform that we believe positions us extremely well to help the development of American soccer talent. In the last 12 months alone, we've held 2 very successful USL Academy Cup events and are still very much on target for a launch of the Academy League in 2021. So while the announcement you mentioned to me is important, they do little to change the trajectory of the USL Academy platform as a whole." And that's from Ryan, which is very encouraging because one thing that USL does very, very well is they plug in the gaps of the soccer deserts across the country, regardless of the size. And I think that's an advantage that they have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you basically have 2 youth academies going simultaneously, which would essentially feed in to each other at some point. You know, you're looking at a feeder going into a feeder at some point. So that's great.
Well, and Ryan brought up a great point in our interview a few months ago right before the start of the season. I guess it was just a couple of months ago, that in these smaller cities that are just getting soccer, that have been soccer deserts, you know, now there's players there that the young kids can say, "Hey, if they can do that here in my city, I can do that too."
Right.
And as USL Academy starts getting these teams higher up, investing in academy teams, and we start seeing that, we're going to see a ton of youth clubs that are going to partner with them. Right. And I think that's just going to blossom. So USL sounds like they were already insulated against something like this happening. And I know for our USL Championship fans out there, this is a very important question because the league is going so well, has so much momentum, and some are wondering if this could, you know, undercut them at some level. The league seems to think no, that it will not.
I don't think it
do
will.
That.
Yeah, no, I don't think it will.
And by the way, one last note. I want to say congratulations to Las Vegas Lights center back Ramon Martin Del Campo. He is now a proud new papa.
Yay!
And we want to congratulate the Del Campo family on a very healthy, happy beginning. And, of course, we thought you played a heck of a game in the virtual match that we made up out of thin air. We thought you did a heck of a job.
Yeah, no, and fantastic out there on the pitch.
And we know that they love him in Vegas. They were very excited to have him in reality. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, please keep Dottie and Dalai Lama away from the baby. I don't know if that's safe until they have their vaccines. The baby has the vaccines that, you know, at 6 months of age or whatever. Yeah. But we say congratulations and, you know, may your family be healthy and happy as the years go on and hopefully see you on the pitch really, really soon.
Absolutely. Oh, congratulations. Welcome to the club, Daddy.
We good?
That does it for me.
We're done. It's my three subs.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more My Three Subs podcast, a Soccer Odyssey.